Hey guys, thanks for all your support. Listen to the G&JB show. Today we have Reagan Desay, a great boxer and a great young man, 23 years old, doing good things in his sport and also in his personal life. One of the best messages I took from this podcast was when Reagan talked about losses early on in your career. You know, this can translate to business, sport, life, whatever, but how important they are to help you keep moving forward. Thanks again. Welcome to the G&JB show, episode number 16. Jack Bowen, freshly returned from the World Championships. How's things?
Yeah, good, G. How are you?
Mate, had a great tournament over there, but unfortunately didn't get the nod in the last fight.
Not the second fight, no. First fight I did, but yeah, a bit unfortunate in the second one.
Mate, today we've got one of Australia's best professional boxers, Reagan Desay. G'day, Reagan. How's things?
Gareth,
hey,
Jack.
Man.
Thanks for having me on today.
No problems, mate. Look. Mate, first things first, to say, decide, to sex, to big dicks,
I don't know,
whatever. What the fuck? Mate, so many people just come up with all these names for you, but it is to say, we checked that before I said it.
Yeah, even I double checked it as well.
Before he came, he rang his dad.
Yeah, just how do you pronounce it again?
Yeah, granddad as well, just to get a second opinion, eh?
Oh, mate, that's excellent. Mate, you're fresh off a fight with Aaron Lay.
Yeah, yeah.
That's how I pronounce his name, I think.
Yeah, Aaron.
I'll bring Aaron.
Yeah.
Mate, was it fifth round stoppage?
So round four stoppage.
Talk us through it. How did it go?
Yeah, it was a very fan-friendly fight. And I said that to a lot of people before the fight. I said, if you're looking for a good fight, I think this is going to be a cracker because you got, me obviously as the boxer, and that was like my game plan was just to go in, box him smart. And I was getting ready for the 12 rounds against him because he was going into the fight, he was 12 wins, 4 losses, but his 4 losses, he'd never been stopped. And he'd been dropped a few times, but he'd always got up and recovered and always went the distance.
Where's he from?
He was from Sydney.
So it was his home crowd too. Went on his turf.
Yeah, so on his turf, so I fought away on the on the away grounds against he had a big crowd there to support him as well. So it was good to get it was an exciting fight, and I dropped him clean in round 3, and he got up and recovered from it. And how he got up, I don't know, because his back leg was gone. And he just came out swinging, but I just knew I had to be smart. Then in round 4, it wasn't a big shot, but I just caught him on the right spot, and that was it. Then the ref waved it.
So that was a 12-round fight. Is that for a title?
It was a 12-round fight for the the OPBF, which is like the sister company of the WBC.
Have you done a 12 before?
No, that was my first 12-rounder. So sort of everything in the last year, I'd got ready for 4 10-rounders in the last 10 years, and then that was my first one stepping up to 12-round preparation. So,
yeah, nice.
How did that prep look compared to the 10-round prep?
Yeah, it's strange. Like in sparring and that, definitely, you do it in 10 rounds, and I felt like I got really comfortable with them. But then just sort of pushing those extra 2 rounds. And a big thing is a big thing I found was just mentally as well, just mentally preparing yourself. Like when you get to round 10 and you're like, right, you need a kick for even stronger for another 2 rounds after that. You think you do, doesn't matter who you are, if you're doing like 10-3 straight, you're going to feel some sort of tiredness or fatigue at the end, but just getting that extra 2 rounds.
As people talk about the second win, did you feel like you get to a stage early in the fight, you felt tired after 4 and then you went through and you coasted, or was it just getting harder as you went along?
In the 4 rounds,
I'm going back to when you boxed Caparello, for example, that went in the 10?
Yep.
Did you hit your second win, or did you... But it just getting harder as the deeper you went.
Yeah, it's strange. Like when I got to round 7, I felt really good up to 7 rounds. I felt like I kept a good pace, and just sort of with my head mentally, I was just like, fuck, I can pick it up another gear here.
Nice.
And it was good. And I felt that with the 12 rounds as well, more in the preparation side of things. But against Aaron Lai, he's like tough as, he's tough as shit. And straight up in round 1 with about 10 seconds to go in the round, he caught me with a big left hook, and a lot of people were like, oh, wait, Reagan's gone here, he's rattled. But I think it looked worse than what it was, because I knew I got hit with the shot, but I still had all my legs were good, everything was good.
Not wobbly or anything?
Yeah, I think I just went off balance and I came back off the ropes, and everyone was like, oh, he's Gornia, but in my head I was like, I'm sweet, you know, just relax. And I think he saw that, and I think he thought like, oh, I'm going to finish this kid here. And I think he put his foot on the gas a bit too hard too early. And then by doing that, he got himself dropped from that.
Yeah, nice. Oh, excellent. So, mate, let's go back a notch. Let's rank it as a young kid. Sort of, let a lot of people listen, and they definitely will, because it's you. You know, you're a good, humble young man that's done. I know you're a very committed athlete. Let's tell us about how the early days of Reagan were. What did you do? Where were you born? I don't know. What did you do as a kid? That sort of stuff.
Yeah, well, I was born on the Gold Coast at the Gold Coast Hospital, and just from as long as I can remember, like just growing up, like Dad was just always in the in the boxing gym. So we started at Nuggets Thai Boxing Gym when it was originally at Newmarket.
That's right. Yeah.
Back in the day, and that was when like Soren, Daddy Cool, all them were in their prime. It was a big gym and a big stable, and I was only four, 5, 6 years old, sort of growing up out of it. And like, I did a little bit of training here and there, but it was just more like being around the fighters and just watching them. And then it just sort of like, when I was a kid that age, I was just like, I told myself, I was like, fuck, like that'd be a dream to just get in there and even do that one day. Then so I just sort of, I kept the training up, and a lot of people don't even know this. I think when I was about, 9 or 10, it was, Gareth and Chris McCullen in the back shed.
We had the shed, and we did some technique stuff and that sort of stuff.
Were probably my second coaches back then. Because one thing back then, like, Dad didn't really have an interest in wanting to coach me, put me. So, I started with Nugget, which was good because he's just tough as nails, like old school hard.
Right.
It was good just going to Chris and Gareth, getting the technical side of things.
Yeah,
and
nice.
When I was from 10 to 12 years old, I wanted to play rugby league really badly. So I went and played league. And when I was 12, I was about, I think the heaviest I got was about 90 kilos as a 12-year-old. And I wasn't six foot two. I was probably 5'1" and just this big, big fat overweight kid. And
yeah, you were a big kid.
Yeah. It probably didn't help. I lived at my mum's house and she's Thai, so it was just Thai food for breakfast, lunch, and dinner. Yeah.
Jack wants to come over there. Excellent. So who did you play footy for?
My first year of footy was for Waterford Demons. Yep. I went to Springwood for a year, and then my last year was East at Holland Park.
Oh, yeah, nice.
So in there, then...
So who coached you? Can you remember any coaches' names? Because I know a few of those guys. I don't know if we...
Those are
the older heads.
Yeah, older heads. Who coached us at East was Boothie, and I think
Boothie
was our
number 12
coach.
He's part of the furniture.
Yeah, yeah. So then, I think I seen him here like after I dropped weight when I was about 16 or something. He didn't even recognise me.
Was his son in that team as well, Aaron?
Yeah, so his son was in it too.
Yeah, cool.
I played footy for 3 years, but one thing, playing footy for 3 years, and this is as well for all the kids out there as well watching, that are younger as well. I got more injuries playing rugby league for 3 years than I have boxing for 10, 11, 12 years.
Playing AFL, I had more injuries playing AFL than I have boxing.
And generally, what do you get in boxing? A blood nose. So you might get a hand injury every now and again, a bit of a shoulder, but it's less. It's so.
My
football season is so demanding.
And then especially for a 12-year-old, think you're a young kid as well, and it puts you off having to sit in the doctors for like hours time, and you're like, fuck, I should be out playing on the field.
That's right. Well, look, now as well, the little 12-year-olds, some of these kids are massive playing footy now.
Ridiculous.
You're one of the big ones, though.
Yeah, he was
one of the
short
ones, but still the fucking big ones.
Well, I remember those Islanders that were like in the 100-kilo mark as well. And
under 14s and stuff like that, they're huge, aren't they?
Yeah,
I was that big when I was that age. 6'7". Excellent. So where did you go to high school?
So I went to Groves Christian College. That was when I started high school in, back then was grade 8, was the start of high school. That's when I went and started boxing again. And because I lived at my mum's house, there was a gym close by, Cobra Boxing, with Shane Kay.
Aaron's boy.
So I had my first, it would have been about 12, 13 fights with Shane. But when I started training at Shane's, I was 90 kilos, I was fat and I was overweight. And I remember he sort of looked at me and he had a heap of people in the gym and he just said, oh, look, mate, like, I'm going to give you, like, you know, a 2-week trial. Like, if you don't make the cut, like, you know, don't bother coming back. And then I remember,
see you later, mate.
I remember this clear as day. The first night of training, I was doing step ups. And this was like just the warm up still. And then I was doing step ups and about 3 minutes into it, I just spewed my whole guts up, hey? And then I just felt then, I was just like, fuck, this guy's not going to want me back straight away. And, you know what? Just then I just sort of told myself, like, no, like, yeah, I want it badly. And, you know, I stuck with it. And yeah, he said, like, he got me on the scales and he said, look, mate, like, I'm not going to, you're 12 years old, you know, you're close, you're a heavyweight. Like, I'm not going to get you any fights. Like, you're going to have to drop some weight. And I think dropping down, I had my first fight at 75. It was a bit of a mismatch. So I was 12. I dropped down to, I think I was about 72 and a half, and I got matched with Caden Sloan.
So
he was my first
fight.
Kabingai organised that. So I was 12. I think Caden was 15, and he already had four fights. And then, Shane was like, oh, mate, you'll be right. Like, yeah, it's just a 15-year-old with four fights. And then I remember, like, I was 12, I dropped all this weight. And then, like, I got in, and I think my first amateur fight, he stopped me in round one or two. Yeah, so I got stopped. And I remember I got out of the ring and I started crying. And I just thought, like, fuck, I'm shit. But sort of looking back on it now, I was just like, any kids I try, I wouldn't step up that much in age, weight, and experience like that. And but you know what? From then, it was just like, no, I'm not going to give this up now. I'm going to follow my dream. And I stuck with it. And I think my next 10 fights after that, it literally went like loss, win, loss, win, loss, win. Yeah. You know, and
we say that about your record as well. It's very similar too early on.
And it is always the hard workers that pull through. And
you know what?
You're 23 now, and most of the boys that are beating you when you're a junior aren't still boxing.
Yeah, exactly. And I'm sure the same for you too.
Yeah, 100%. As well. Yeah.
But it's funny, you hear about all these guys like Golovkin's record and who else? Mayweather's record and Lomachenko's record, and they haven't had many losses. You know what? There's nothing wrong with losses when you're learning as an amateur.
Yeah, exactly.
Because you guys wouldn't be anywhere near you guys if you didn't have those early losses.
Yeah, exactly.
That's like Brad Hall lost his first 9 fights. Well, no one gives a fuck anymore because he went to 2 Olympic Games.
Exactly. Like, yeah, that's
if that would have beaten him and quit, and you guys, you could have quit and walked away like everybody else. But sometimes those guys have won constantly, all those early ones. Then when they're put in the deep end, they don't know how to lose. They don't know how to fucking handle it when they get beat for the first time.
You know?
Stop training hard because it's all easy.
It's easy, yeah, that's right. No, I think there's nothing wrong. Like, obviously, nobody goes out to lose fights. It's not a good thing to lose, but it doesn't beat you when you're young, does it? It's a good thing. I think it's a good experience to go through, you know, especially young. You agree, right?
100%. Very humbling as well. Like, when I played league, like, I had a big head, but then it wasn't until I started boxing, like, it humbled me the fuck.
Yeah, 100%, mate. Yeah, you think you're a bit tough and, you know, playing footy and everything, and then you realize when the kid 10, 15 kilos lighter, then you're in sparring, gives you a touch up, then you're not all that.
Exactly. Yeah.
We've all had those touch ups before, you know.
And you don't have another 12 teammates there to come running in for you.
100.
You're another person.
100%. Mate, I actually want to go back and touch on the Blake Caporello fight.
Yeah.
One of the questions that somebody sent in was, would you like the rematch if the opportunity arose? Look, and that was from Shadowboxing. His Instagram name, so check him out on Instagram. I don't know who the guy is.
I made him. Good luck.
You know?
Yeah, right.
So look, he asked about that. Mate, but I want to go further than that. Tell us about that fight. That was, to me, where you stood up and showed who you are on this. Well, he's had major international fights. You've had mainly domestic fights, to be honest.
Yeah,
and Blake Caporello, you showed where you belong, and that you've got a big future in that fight. And to be honest, sorry Blake, I thought Reagan won that fight, as did a lot of other guys. But you know, I remember watching it on YouTube, Jack. I remember us talking after, going, "What the fuck happened there?" Look, it is what it is, and I know you become quite friends with Blake now. And you've done some extra sparring, and you know, to be honest, good luck to Blake in his next fight. Joshua Buatsi. That's going to be an amazing fight, but tell us about that experience, you know, like the lead up, some behind the scenes sort of shit. Did things go right in training? Was things going wrong? Give us a bit of insight in that fight?
Honestly, like for boxing and like a whole, even just like a life experience, like I felt like that whole, like, you know, 4 or 5 months of my life, like, it took me like to a place I've never been before in my life.
Yeah, because
what had happened was I fought Steve Lovett in November last year, and I remember, so Steve Lovett, when I went to my first Australian titles in 2009, and I think, yeah, you and Chris McCullen were on that trip as well,
yep.
Gareth. I think I was 13, I fought Jai, and I remember Steve Lovett was elite then, and he won, like, he cleaned up and won, like, every elite male track, like, I think.
Was that in Canberra?
That was the Canberra
one.
And I remember Steve Lovett, he was sort of like the face of boxing Australia.
Because he was in the AIS camp and all that sort of shit, wasn't he?
Yeah, he won all the awards at that, and then I remember as a 12, 13-year-old, I remember, like, this guy must be, like, he must be the man. Like,
you
know, he's winning, like, you know, he won the Elite 81s, I think, and he's cleaned up all these titles. And then, so in November, I was matched to fight Steve Lovett, and there was a lot of people before that fight that said, like, oh, Reagan, like, you know, you're going to get, like, knocked out. This guy's going to be way too strong, way too powerful.
Wow.
And, yeah, so I fought him in November, and I knocked him out with a big right uppercut in round two. And, I remember it got the Oz Boxing nominated for the knockout of the year.
I was cracking up with that too, yeah.
Even as a professional, so many people said, like, I'm too weak, like, I can't punch, I've got no power. And then just sort of like there, it was just, to me, mentally, it was just like, oh, like, you know, that put me, you know, it just, you know, shut all the haters up there straight away. But it was pretty much after that fight, that's when the Blake Caparello fight came up and got made up. And,
Sam Labruna promoted it?
So Sam Labruna was the promoter, and it was strange. It was just on, it was on Oz Boxing that sort of got, I think Oz Boxing, they get a lot of fights going,
get a lot of
the talk happening, where I think after I beat Steve Lovett, they said, oh, you know, introducing Australia's number one light heavyweight pro.
Oh,
then,
that's right, yeah.
And then they,
I remember it took a few days actually for you to respond to it, and it was just getting the contract signed or something.
That's because I think he came out and said, like, oh, like, I'm the number one, like, yeah, if this kid, if he's going around saying he's number one, like, you know, why doesn't he, I think his exact words was like, let's see if the phone rings in 3 days. Well, you know what, the phone call, not in 3 days, like, I think an hour later. Because honestly, like, I've been brought up with it as well, like, if, and it's, you know, it's boxing, you know, if you want to be the best, you need to beat the best. It's, look, I was in that position there, you know, where they were saying, you know, I was in that number one spot. Cause I think Blake had fought at cruiserweight before, so, you know, everyone thought, oh, he moved up to
cruiserweight. That's where he's going, yeah.
And, you know, and to myself, I'm like, look, like, I'm number one, like, I want to prove it, like, and then, you know, Blake's there saying that, and, you know, he's got the credentials, you know, he's fought for a couple of world titles.
Kovalev,
Durrell, he's fought.
Yeah, he's fought the big guys,
He's fought all, you know, and, you know, it's big respect to Blake as well through his career, and, you know, I remember, I think I watched Blake when I was, like, 10 or 11 years old on Fox then, and I wouldn't have thought, like, fast forward 10 years later, I'd
crazy,
be
in
the ring fighting him. So, yeah, leading up to that fight, really good preparation. We had a lot of sparring with Farris Chevalier.
Good left hand, mate. Awesome. I think jumping in there with Farris, I think he could have gone a lot further. Than he's actually had. I don't know what happened with promotional deals or where he's training, but he had some talent, eh?
Oh, 100%. Yeah. And honestly, he was such good sparring leading up, but fought such a good, crafty, like, awkward southpaw. Yeah. Really good lead up and preparation, and not making any excuses or anything, but when I fought Steve Lovett, that right uppercut, I hurt my hand pretty badly on him, so my hand wasn't like 100%.
Throwing that punch?
It was from that exact punch. Uppercut.
It's good job, it was the last punch you had to throw.
That's right, 100%. So sort of the fight got made, and I think we had about a good 12 weeks to lead up to it, and just a few times in the camp, like, it was playing up here and there. Mm. And then I remember I had the fight, and it was about probably six rounds into the fight. Like, I just felt like, fuck, like, my right hand's gone. But, like, in my head, just mentally, I'm like, I don't care. Like, I'm just going to keep going, keep pushing.
Did it eventually just go numb and you just threw it? Or?
Oh, yeah, it was numb. And I was just like, I don't care. It's numb. I don't care if it's broken in my spots. It's getting it's getting thrown. But yeah, it was a hell of a fight. And I remember, yeah, the whole lead up, the whole preparation was good. And then as well, there was a lot of media for it as well. Yeah. And there was a lot of backwards and forwards between both our camps. Yeah. Not me and Blake directly so much, but a lot of our supporters were going backwards and forwards. And
let them build the fight rather than you.
That's right. So, but yeah, it was during the fight, felt really good. I felt like, you know, I was establishing my jab and then my second phases really well. Yeah. And got to about round six, and yeah, a lot of people don't know this, so there's a little bit of behind the scenes stuff. Yeah. But well, six rounds in, and I honestly thought I might have been, you know, probably four, five rounds up. You know, you just know, just subconsciously. Then one of my first boxing trainers, Lincoln Hudson, he was at ringside, and all I could hear was during the fight was just, Rags, these judges have you down. Every single round, you've got to have to pick it up. And just in my head, I just said, like, I'm going for broke here. Like, I don't care if I'm getting knocked out. Let's go. Let's go. Yeah, so it was six rounds in, and just coming back to the corner, you know, Lincoln told my dad and Mark Evans and Dave I was down. And yeah, for me, it was just, I had to go for broke, so which, you know, I think I did. And a lot of people said, like, mate, like that second half of the fight, it looked like you picked your pace up even more. And I remember one of our supporters, he said, like, mate, it looks like you ran like half a marathon in there that night. Like, and it felt like it afterwards as well. But yeah, we got to the end, and a lot of my supporters, they were all high-fiving each other, and they were just like, because there was no commentary or anything like that there at the pavilion, and they were all hugging each other going like fuck, he's done it. Like, he's come to Melbourne and he's done it. And then they read the scorecards out, and then they still thought, like, oh, this is Reagan unanimously.
He's gone your way. Yeah.
So two judges had it seven rounds to three to him, and one judge had it six rounds to four to him. And just sort of in my head there, I was just like, oh, there was just like one half second of hope, like, oh, hopefully Lincoln's just talking this up, it was closer than what it was. And then, it went his way. And just sort of, you know, the thing is, at the end of that, I just sort of, you know, I said to myself, like, look, like, preparation, my diet, everything, training, like, I did everything I possibly could have on the night. I did everything I possibly could have. And when it comes down to that, like, it's not like I got knocked out cold or anything like that. Yeah. I knew I did everything I could have, and, you know, I was happy with that. You know, I can go to bed at night going, like, right, oh, I didn't dog it or anything like that. Yeah. You know, which it could have been, a lot of people leading up to that fight were going like, oh, Reagan's not up to this level, you know, like he's gonna get knocked out within four rounds while Blake, you know, right?
I think your stature in Australian boxing, not through people that know you like us, but people that don't know you, you're just you're just Reagan from Queensland. I think your stature has gone up massively, because now they know you can mix it with elite level boxers, you're there, you know what I mean? You are that elite level boxer now, so.
Yeah. I just wanted to ask, what was your initial, like, that feeling as soon as you knew you'd lost? Like, they'd read the scorecards, how did you feel after that?
Oh, honestly, I went back out the back change room, and I remember I laid back on, there was like these couches out the back, and I just sort of in my head, I was just like, what the fuck just happened? I was just looking at the ceiling, and I was just dripping in sweat. Like, I don't think I've sweated so much in my whole life. And I was just, I remember I laid there for 5 minutes before everyone else came in. And an interesting thing, and again, another sort of behind the scenes thing, we went back out the back change room, but Michael Zarafa was one of the only people straight off that fight. He came straight into my change room. He looked me in the eye and he said, mate, he said, what you done tonight, was unbelievable. I don't think anyone would have picked that.
And he's in Blake's camp.
And he's in Blake's camp. Yeah, he was in Blake's camp. Nice. And I remember he was one of the only people, or the first people to come out the back and just said, mate, just keep doing what you're doing, and you'll go a long way from that. I'll never forget that. Clear as day. And I watched his fight with Kell Brook a few months ago before that, and I was just like, fuck, I said to him, thanks, mate, I really appreciate it.
Especially at that
time. So, but yeah, it was a big, that whole experience just, I felt, you know, it took me to another, not just as a boxer, but as a person in itself. And besides the decision, I wouldn't change nothing for the world.
That's it. So, like you said, when you have those losses, though, you know you belong in that company.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? You know you're there, and you're still, what are you, 23?
Yeah.
So you've still got, you know, if you want, you've still got 10 good competitive years left. You can have more or less if it's your call. But you know you're at that level at 23 years old. It's going to be amazing when you're 26 years old and you're maturing even more and getting more strength and everything. So you're still a young professional right now.
I think,
Jack, you said a similar thing when, well, you explain, Jack, when you were over there at the World Championships and you saw Julio La Cruz over there.
Even just the countries, like watching the groups of countries train, and like Ukraine, there's Russia, all the European countries like GB, and then you've got Cuba and America even. You put them on this pedestal for so long, and you're probably the same with like watching Blake since you're a young kid, and then you end up getting in with them or training alongside them, and you know you're on that level, you can prove yourself.
Yeah.
I just wanted to come back to, obviously, the debate was put out there on social media by like Oz Boxing and whatnot. And you said you had to deal with a lot of haters, even the Steve Lovett fight. How do you overcome just people talking nonsense on social media? And
it's strange, and you hear it so much, but like
in the amateurs, we don't really get it. Oh, you get it, but not on that level. Not the 100, 300 comments.
Couple of coaches have a go, Jeff Frazier.
Not at me, who's good for me. But yeah, how do you deal with that? And do you read the comments or do you leave it? Or
I won't spend ridiculous amounts of time like looking at them. And like one thing as well, like no matter what anyone says, like even if it's like real personal and stuff like that, like I won't comment because I know it's just. Next thing I'll be there for 3 days.
Forwards and then the fire,
But you know, it's one thing as well, like Dad told me as well, like if all these people have such an opinion and that, well, why weren't they in there doing it, you know, in the first place, you know, that's like if they had such an opinion like that, like well, why aren't they in my position doing that exactly there, you know? But for me as well, personally seeing that, like it just fuels me fuels me just so much. It fuels me in training and fuels me like in the fight as well. So I remember there's an old boxer from back in the day, and you might remember him as well. Gareth, Tyrone Jones.
Good
mate of mine. Yeah. But I remember before the Steve Lovett fight, the day of the fight, I read this comment and he was just like, oh, this is going to be a good fight, but I think you're going night-night, Reagan.
He
said it like real straight up like that.
Yeah.
I remember like I read this, I didn't reply to nothing. Then I remember I think it was like that night after the fight, I think I sent him a video of the footage and I was like, I think someone else got night nights on that night. And like he sent me the longest message. It was funny. He was just like, I think I'm just gonna shut up, be humble now, Rags. Good on you, brother. Like, you know, much respect. So like, look, I respect everyone's opinion and everyone's entitled to an opinion. But it's just good when you know you just know like you can prove people wrong.
And I think Jeff's very good with turning a blind eye to the social media as well. I remember I spoke to Jeff before. You get the negative stuff, and he said, look. Doesn't worry me, I can overlook it. Like you're saying, you've just got to push it aside and not dwell in it too. He said, but you know, when they get onto a missus and she gets annoyed, he said, that's when it's fucked because it's got nothing to do with her. He said, that's when I get angry. He said, but and you're probably the same with people that you care about, you know what I mean? Like, if people attack them, that's when it's personal. When it's you go, you know, I'm a boxer, I can just fucking deal with it.
Yeah.
But back to what your dad said too, I remember, you know, Dave Codwell, the English. Trainer from England, he's talking about after Joshua got beat by Ruiz, and just said the same thing, like there's a gym 10-15 minutes away from anyone in the world, why aren't you a unified world champion, or why aren't you
in the positions
we get ourselves into?
But
boxing, everyone seems to have
just so personal.
Everyone's the best at it.
It's so personal.
Mate,
actually, I haven't even wrote this down. What do you think about Nigel Bensakio Bika?
I think Bika wins.
I'm not even talking about the fight. I just don't like it.
How old's Nigel Benn?
He's 55.
Yeah.
He's five years younger than you.
Fuck you.
I'm 44. Last thing I want to do is get punched in the fucking face. Mate.
You reckon the money would be good? Or?
It didn't want to be.
Well, it's over in London, isn't
it? It's over there.
He'd sell out still, wouldn't he?
Oh, mate. Because people my age who love... Nigel Benn is my favourite ever fighter, and I've told you that many times. My favourite ever fight, you know, it's terrible tragedy how it ended. Nigel Benn, Gerard McClellan. I love that fight. It's terrible what happened to Gerard after the fight, but I want to remember Nigel Benn in the glory days. I don't want him, mate, I don't like it because I don't want to see him get fucking damaged. Sakio Bika is still a weapon.
Exactly,
You know, like,
do you reckon he'll call out a Eubank senior fight?
I Do you reckon that's what they're edging for? I think that's what he tried originally, but I don't think Eubank wanted
it. See, that'd be okay. They're both old.
It would, but I don't.
But you want to remember them in their
prime. I want to remember them in their fucking glory days. I don't want to remember them fucking getting in the ring with a walking stick. I don't need to remember them that. Mate, Nigel Benn, to me, oh, mate, he was my favourite ever, and I don't want to... Mate, I don't want to be having this conversation and build a shadow over boxing because an older guy got in and something major happened to him. I fucking hate that.
Oh, yeah. Someone that's still, like, just, you know, that's still right. there.
Still,
yeah.
like, Sakyo Beck, I don't know what his last fight was. He's not super active at the moment, but he's still probably 15, 20 years younger.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? So,
100%. No, definitely. Nigel Benn versus Sakyo Beaker. So this, because Nigel Benn, he lives out here, and obviously Sakyo's Australian as well. So I know, could that maybe lead into the mix for Jeff Fenwick versus Costa Zoo? I've seen them both on the panel there, because obviously Costa Zoo was there with Tim. He's fighting Jack Brubaker, who Brubaker's going to, he fights under Jeff Fenwick.
He's just moved to Fenwick too,
Yeah.
She's two greats in the corner there.
Yeah.
I'd see those two boys get it on.
They might get it on after.
Yeah, Jeff seems that he had a bit to say about Tim's corner in the last couple of fights too. You see that? Yeah.
Yeah, that's right. Brubaker, who, we're on that. Who wins that? Who wins that fight, Tim or Jack?
I think because the fight's at super welterweight, so 69, so that's Tim's weight. And Brubaker's campaigned most of his fights at 66 at welterweight. I think for Jack, I think, you know, he's a pretty small build sort of guy, you know. I think just going up in that weight, he'll see the difference, you know.
I've liked Tim Zoo since he was a kid, since he was an amateur. Great style, very technically good, and as he's maturing, he's getting a bit of pop in his shots now. And look, to be honest, I thought Jack Brubaker, his last few fights, he's been quite lucky.
Yeah.
Toro Nurse, the English guy, I don't know if anyone saw that one.
Yeah, great.
I thought he was really lucky. Yeah. I thought he was really lucky there. I thought he was lucky against Daniel Kennedy in the last fight. Yeah. The cut stopped it. I thought DK was up in front. And I didn't see the Telford fight because I was out the back. Hodjo fought that night. But from all accounts, that was a bit of a seesawing battle as well. Yeah, that was a bit to and fro. So,
to be fair, he is taking tough fights. Like,
mate,
they're not walkovers. So.
Yeah,
and
exactly.
Has he fought Chris George as well?
Yeah. Has he?
Yeah,
did
I'm
he beat
sure
Chris George?
I'm pretty sure he beat Chris George, yeah.
Mate, one thing about him, Jack Brubaker will fight anybody.
Yeah, and mate, that's the thing that puts him in the fight too. Yeah. He's tough, he's willing, he's fit.
Mate, he won't lie down. He'll just stand there and battle until it's over. Like, that's one thing, you know.
But look, in those fights, he has done that too.
That's right, yeah.
That's what makes it a good fight, I think.
Mate, he's probably got more... Do you reckon he's got more strength than Dwight Ritchie? General strength?
I'm not too sure.
I suppose, like you said, he's coming up in weight, isn't he?
Yeah, going from welter to super welter.
Yeah. He just looks lean and big, but I suppose he does against other welterweights, not against junior middles. Anyway, it'd be a good fight. Another good event put on by Matt Rose and the crew down there at No Limit Boxing. They put some good shows on. It's good that they've got it back on TV. Bill and Costa's name and, well, Bill and Jack Brubaker's name. Because I think he's boxed on every show too.
Yeah, he's boxed on a few. Yeah.
And it's good to see it out there on TV as well. Mate, a couple of questions
I'm
going to throw out to you that have come in through our Instagram page. Jamie Pittman.
Yeah.
Former WBA world champion challenger.
Mr. Business.
And good friend of all ours as well. He asked you, he put forward that you were a talented amateur before you turned professional. And it was at an early age that you did turn professional. Why did you decide to turn professional so young?
Yeah, it's a good question.
And how old were you?
I think 18 and 3 months when I turned professional. So
you're just allowed to turn professional, really?
Yeah, that's right. So what had happened was and a lot of people don't know this, when I turned 18, because me and my father, Clem, we had a fitness centre for about 2 years.
Yep.
And obviously that was when
that's
I was still
Slacks Creek, wasn't it?
Yeah, just at Slacks Creek there. And you know, we put everything we did into it for 2 years, and you know, for 2 years, you know, it was really good, you know, good gym, good atmosphere, but you know, pretty much for 2 years, we pretty much broke even. So when I was 18, that's where I went to work at World Gym Southside, so where I'm at now. But you know, working, you know, and it's one of the things here in Australia, especially in the amateurs and the professionals, and I'm sure you know you can vouch for this as well, Jack, or you know, I'll ask your opinion on this. But holding down a full-time job, and you know that as well, you know, it's a full-time business, you know, where you got rent and you got overheads every, you know, every week of the year. Like I wouldn't have been able to go in and pursue my career doing that if I was to stay amateur. So the reason being is, you know, before that, I did a lot of camps down at the AIS, you know, for weeks and months away at times, and then all the overseas stuff as well. But
and they're all costing you money.
All costing me money.
You've got to pay for everything in the amateurs.
Yeah, that's right.
And being away from work even.
As well, so had the opportunity to work at World Gym there. I don't think it would have gone down well with my boss if I was to say, like, every couple of weeks, like, oh, look, mate, I'm going away for 3 weeks. Yep. And then he'd be on, well, mate, where's the rent going to be for that 3 weeks? So for me to, you know, continue, you know, which, you know, I love boxing deep down, you know, Dad said to me, like, mate, I think one of the best things you could do is, you know, turn professional, because professional, you know, you won't be traveling away as much. You know, you're only 18 now. You know, you can still work full time, you know, which is what I still do now. So I work full time doing my personal training and coaching around, you know, your fights and everything else as well. Yeah. Where the amateurs, especially at that level, going away so much, like it was just going to be too hard, and just
fighting so much as well. Like you fight all the time as well.
That's right. Yeah. So you know, you need that. You know, you need that R&R time away as well. So, and it's one thing, like I was saying, life. You know, no regrets. You know, what's done is done. And I turned pro when I was 18, and pretty much from when I was 18, I'm 23 now. So I've been professional for 5 years. It's and still is now. You know, it's learning on the job. Learning on the job, and you know, I felt like, you know, I've been brought along really well, you know, with the fights I've had, and then especially the last couple of years moving into the bigger regional fights, you know, I feel like, you know, I've stepped up at a good, you know, good pace and taking the right fights at the right time.
Mate, early on, your first loss, what was his name?
So Mo Sormatagi from New Zealand.
I was checking out your BoxRec record today, and he's kicked on massively since. He was a tough fight early. He had a couple of draws coming into your fight.
Yeah, I think he was two wins, a loss, and two draws.
So like on paper, that doesn't sound great. But what you got to remember, Bernard Hopkins was also 0-1 at one stage of his life too.
That's right.
Because he lost his first fight.
Yeah.
First professional fight. Like, yeah, he's kicked on. I don't think he's lost since then. He's got on like 13 wins. He's got a record of like 13-2 or something like that.
Yeah, that's right.
So, mate, I want you to tell me what you learned from that.
Honestly, though, I'll be straight up and honest, that fight, I learnt more than any other professional fight I've had. So the reason being is, so I fought most in the amateurs at the Australian Golden Gloves.
Oh, did you too? I didn't know that.
So in the amateurs, I think I was 16 or 17, so I fought him and I beat him unanimously, and just sort of in my head, I just thought, like, you know, I beat this guy unanimously in the amateurs. And then in the professionals, what happened in that fight, I'd been dropping down to suit where in the amateurs I fought it towards the end of my career at 81, but then I had a few fights at super middleweight and the professionals, and I felt dropping down that extra from 79 to 76, like for someone like a 6'1" at the time, like it was a massive toll on me, and I felt
and still growing too, I suppose.
I felt rooted making that weight, and I felt like honestly it. And he, you know, he was just naturally a 76 because he was a bit shorter and stockier. So I felt going into the fight a little bit drained. And then in the fight, he came out and he threw a massive overhand right and caught me on the bang on the top of the head. Mm. So big things I learned and took away from that was, like, well, the first thing was, you know, don't underestimate anyone, because I think we were looking ahead then of, like, all right, well, when we get over this fight, what are we going to do next? You know, straight, you know, state title, Australian title, you know, what's next? Then. So I got caught on the back of the head. So, well, first thing, you know, and especially, you know, for you young kids as well, even in the amateurs too, you know, you've beaten someone 3, 4, 5 times, and if they come back to fight you, well, you know, you've got to put it on them again, and you've got to keep beating them, because every fight's a new fight, you know. So, don't underestimate anyone. As well, in the preparation too, you know, I learned that was a weight I wasn't going to make. make anymore. So obviously going back to light heavyweight, since I've been back at light heavyweight, that's the only loss I've had was against Blake Caparello. So I might as well say, I've been unbeaten at light heavyweight and I feel just naturally better at it too.
I think he's beat David Light as well, has he?
He beat Kerry Foley.
He stopped Kerry Foley, not long ago. But I just looked at his record. He's beat some good guys.
He fought that bloke on the Joshua Parker undercard in the UK. He beat a prospect that was like 12-0. And from what I saw, he was getting beat every round, and then he did like the same thing what he did to me. He sort of caught this guy on the side or the back of the head and just put it on him, and the ref waved it.
It's so true what we've been saying. Like, from those losses, you actually look at them and really look how I've got to improve.
Yeah.
That's why young kids having amateur losses, it's fucking irrelevant, really. They've got to look at them and learn and improve. And if you hadn't had some of those losses, you might still be that guy now. If you hadn't had that loss, you might be thinking, I'm fucking unbeatable until I go through the next one, and it would come. But now you learn so much from that moving forward.
Exactly, yeah.
And like you said, the main thing is that you don't take anybody laying down. Everyone's a fucking live opponent, aren't they? Exactly. Like I say to you, Jack, every fight starts like this. Every fight starts at 0-0. It's up to you to make the fight swing to be in your favor, Like, you can't just,
Do you find you offer that advice to kids you're training now as well? Because obviously they're only going to see you. Most of your fights have been wins, so they only see you winning most of the time, and they think this is the life. And Reagan wins all the time. Why am I losing? What advice do you offer them after a loss?
100. That's a great question. And 100%. After a loss, like I'll look at the main thing I look at is if it's win or loss, how did they perform? Because sometimes I'll win and I'll go like, mate, like you might have won that today, but you fought shit house, compared to what you produce in the gym. Or if they lose a fight and that they fought really good, I'll go like, look, mate, like you fought really good, but maybe next time this is what you got to do to change a few things up to get over the line for the win. Maybe put a little bit more pressure on.
Do you offer your experiences as well through the amateur game as well, and the pros?
100%. As a coach, I try and use everything I learned through the amateurs and even now as a professional. So everything I've done, obviously, if it's not broke, don't fix it. But then everything I felt like I'd done wrong, or even like with making weight, stuff like that, I'll offer that advice to the kids and try and help them as much and guide them as much as I can,
Just going to ask you about one of your amateur boxers that you've had a lot of success with over the last few years, is Dave Hadfield. One of your sparring partners, I believe. Do you want to give us a little bit of insight into Dave's future with you? And
100%. Well, it was interesting because, Dave, when he started boxing, I think he played, he was a high-level soccer and futsal player. When he came... High-level soccer player. And I think he was saying to me, why he came up and said, I want to just try a little bit of boxing out. He said he was walking up, a flight of stairs at work, and he felt like he was fucked. And he was like, oh, my fitness is shit. I've got to improve on my fitness. And he's just one of those blokes that's just naturally... just athletically, you could probably hand him, a football or something. He's just naturally athletically just sound.
And
it makes a big difference when you've got someone that's coordinated as well. You save yourself about a year.
Remember Big Gareth
Bamford?
Fucking hell, he was an uncoordinated bloke, but he worked really hard and eventually he got it. But like you said, it would have saved so much if he was naturally coordinated.
Definitely. Yeah, he just... had him in the gym and just pretty much from scratch just taught him, and it's been a long journey and it's still going now, but I think it was within, I think it was his 15th amateur fight, he qualified to go to the Commonwealth Games trials, and I think it was his 15th fight he fought Jason Watley. It wasn't like I remember the first fight at the Aussies, he knocked the guy out in round one and everyone on the team was like, and David Hammerfist, this guy punches hard, because one thing he's got ridiculous not just power and he's strong, but just he's got good, he's got hard hands, so if he hits you on the right spot, you're gonna know about it for sure. So then he fought Watley in his 15th fight, and he got beat on unanimous decision, but it wasn't like a shutout or anything like that. I think even Watley just went like, fuck, that guy's strong, and he's good for 15 fights. And yeah, the last Aussies, Dave got beat in the semi-finals, so just, you know, just fought short, and I think Austin went to the Wolves with you, so.
Austin's a good boxer too.
He is, That heavyweight division in the amateurs at the moment is very up for grabs too. All those boys have beaten each other.
Around the similar level,
and lost to each other as well. So
exactly.
Interesting. Who else is the guy from Perth as well?
Brandon Reed.
Yeah. So that's a good mix.
But they're all in the mix, and yeah, it's great to see.
Yeah, definitely.
And credit to you as a coach too, Reagan. Well done. So
what's he going to do? Is he going to stay on and
our next goal is with coming up now. So all the Olympic qualifiers that are coming
up.
So we've got all the Olympic stuff, and then I will say this now. He will go. He will be turning professional in the next couple of years.
Yeah, nice.
So that'd be good. But I think
how old is Dave?
He's 27.
Yeah, so nice.
I think. He turns professional, he's gonna cause some damage in the cruiserweight division.
He's a committed kid too. He's always committed as well, like that's what I've known.
Yeah, 100%.
Mate, another question from Ryan Enderhimba. I suppose it bounces off Jamie Pittman's question. Do you ever regret turning pro so young? Have you ever sat there and thought, fuck, it was good traveling away, but...
Yeah.
Any regrets about turning pro so young?
Honestly, like looking back on it now, like no, like I don't regret it at all because like what's done is done.
Now you're 18 and 2 at 22, you're 23 years old.
Yeah, that's right. You know, what's done is done. If I could have gone and done my time again, I would have probably tried to go on for the Rio Olympics, which was 2 years after that, so when I was 20. But you know, what's done is done. So instead of going for the Olympics, you know, I'm 18 and 2 as a professional now. I sort of got that extra 2 years experience as a pro under my belt. So happy days. Thanks, Ryan.
That's good. Ryan, well done, mate. Somebody called Bronte Smith sent a message. How do you manage to have all your great success but stay so humble, mate? You've always been a kid that sort of, well, in my mind, you're always at the amateurs. You haven't changed a bit.
Yeah. Oh, honestly,
so how do you deal with it? Is it something you think about, or just be you?
Nah, honestly, I'm not. It's one thing. I'm not trying to be someone or like. I'm just doing my own thing. I'm staying in my own lane. So it's just, I'm not. I know they say like, oh, you got so much pressure on it. Like, you got pressure on that, and you got pressure. You got to keep winning that no matter what. But, yeah, I'm just staying in my lane and I'm just doing my thing,
That's good. Now, that's a big lesson to people. I think too many young people nowadays fall into the Instagram world. It's all about the fucking take 18 shots to get one good one. Yeah. And that's where they think life is.
I'm pretty lucky I get one good one. One shot.
But
have you seen this guy's Instagram?
Bloody good looking, eh?
Really good looking. Looking at you now, there must be a lot of fucking filters.
It's a lot of makeup. It's just getting the right photo.
Jack has a fucking makeup artist on his face before he takes an Instagram photo.
Yeah, you're going to do it right. But coming back to being humble, Reagan, I just think you've held your character so well, even in times of adversity. Like I thought you were unlucky in that Blake Caprillo decision and the way you handled yourself after it, and just kind of scratched it and moved forward and didn't dwell in the moment. I know myself, I probably would have been a little bit
over the top. One thing I said to myself there as well, I was just like, if I kick up a storm, which and like all that, like it's not going to change the decision.
Yeah, 100%.
Like if I go like, you know what, like fuck you, Melbourne, you're
not fighting in Melbourne again.
it's not like they can go, look, we read the wrong scorecard.
I'm scared of Reagan. I might change that.
That is true, but credit to you for that.
Like you said, it's not going to change anything. And you know what? You've grown so much more for being humble after that. And like, again, once I said, Team LaBruna, and Blake Caparello, I wish him all the best against Josh Buarque. That's a big fight. But they're the fights you want. You dream of those fucking fights. Yeah. When they come, you've got to fucking take them. And, good luck for them.
And that'll be you in a couple of years too, I'm sure. Yeah, for sure. That'll be awesome.
Speaking of a couple of years, where are you going to be in 5 years' time? What's Reagan at? Where's Reagan Desix at?
Desix or to say? That guy's down the road.
Yeah. Desixed. Whatever.
So 5 years, and it's one thing like I'm big on as well, and like, I tell all my kids in the gym too, is like goal setting. Like it's good to set like so short term goals. So whether that be like where do you see yourself in the next 1 to 3 yeah. months, like midterm goals, like in the next year, or like this one more long term yeah. goal. But yeah, honestly, 5 years, so I'll be 28. So getting, you know, towards, you know, what they'd say prime in the yeah. light heavyweight division. Like I really hope I can look back on it and say like, right, I'm in that top contention or that yeah. top tier, and you know, hopefully get an opportunity for, you know, big world title fights.
Hopefully the straps are your anyways.
Yeah, that's, yeah, well, that too. So, you know, that's like anyone in boxing, I'm sure, yeah, it's yours too, Jay, you know, yeah, being sure. a world champion, you know. You just felt short, you know, a few weeks ago at the current world champion. And even yeah. just to make it there to the worlds, like, yeah. credit to you.
Sometimes
you know.
It's harder getting out the country than it is to win fights over there.
That's right. That was what we said that early on in the year, when we set our goals for the year. It was medal at world championships. Look, that didn't happen
just
because
out
it's out of your hands. But yeah. we always thought that it's about getting out of Australia. When you're on the international circuit, they tend to
the style
award different
yeah.
styles, you know yeah. what I mean? Yeah, exactly. And not just the ones yeah. that suit like Australians walk up tight and walk forward. Mate, yeah. let's move on from 5 years' time though. Who's your dream fight? If you have got an offer right now, 6 months' time, you've got 6 months' preparation for anybody, who would you love? Who would you love to fight?
AJ, no. That's where the money's at. Give me 6 months.
I'll go to Canelo's butcher and I'll eat the same meat and I'll be back.
Get up to 100 kilos. honestly, my dream fight at the moment, like any, you know, any of those four light heavyweight world champions at the moment. So you got the WBO, which is Kovalev, who's yep. fighting Canelo. Yeah. The WBA, Dmitry Bivol, who a lot of people have said, yeah. like, he's my brother. And
he looks like you. He looks like you.
They mentioned it, yeah.
Yeah. yeah. Right. So Dmitry Bivol, so I think maybe, I know Dad might have gone to Kazakhstan maybe 25 years ago.
Excellent.
Yeah. Excellent. Oh,
shit. Wait, when you do fight each other, we won't know which corner to go in.
Nah, then the referee.
Let's go with the winner.
You bought that Canelo fight, though.
Yeah.
Yeah, Canelo check.
Yeah, that'd yeah.
Right,
who wins? Kovalev or Canelo? Who wins that?
Canelo, eh?
Canelo, yeah?
Yeah, just
you. You think he's big enough?
Yeah, I saw holes in that yard fight, I reckon.
Yeah, it's one thing, like, Kovalev has, like, they say, like, he's towards the end of his career, and it was interesting, I was listening to when Joe Rogan talked to Andre Ward on the podcast, and there were so many, like, I've listened to it two times, like, because yeah. there were so many relevant things, and yeah, even Andre Ward, he pointed so many holes he saw in, you know, Kovalev, and yeah,
wow.
yeah, and then you think that was 3-4 years, you know, prior, yeah, yeah. you know, yeah. when he did fight him. So, yeah, I think
it'll be the size, won't it? That if anything, if Kovalev's chances,
yeah,
size.
Yeah, I think Kovalev's just got to box him off his jab, punches, and, yeah.
his jab was good against Yards.
Yeah, his lead right hand too, and he yeah. follows it up. He's nice to watch, but
yeah, and he's big, mate. I'm going to put you in fucking hot water here.
Here we go.
Mate, we're going to throw a scenario at you. You know who you are? You're Glenn Rushton.
Yeah.
Handsome, obviously.
I'll stop there.
Yeah. All right. You're Glenn Rushton in the Horton-Zarapa fight. Firstly, what advice are you giving Jeff in the fight? What, let's say overall, generally, what's your game plan going into that fight?
Well, yeah, I think for Jeff, the same thing. He's coming up against, you know, a good, clean boxer in Zarafa, and you'd have to look at you'd have to look over the films of like what, you know, Kell Brook did, and as well, I think he fought Peter Quillen a few years earlier.
He did too, yeah.
So you know, you'd have to look at those films and see like, you know, what did those guys do to beat him? So yeah. Well, Kell Brook, like he boxed really good, but he didn't box his best, but he just boxed really good.
Yeah.
Being over in the UK, so. Yeah, if I was Glenn, and especially, you know, it's a good, hard scenario, but, yeah, and it's easier, put it this way, it's easier said than done, but, you know, you just have to say, like, mate, you just got to put it on this guy, you know?
And you know what, too? Coaches have got to know their boys, too, because sometimes, say if I had you in the corner and I'd had you against Jack, and it'd be one instruction, but if I have another kid, if I have Jeff boxing against Jack, well, you're capable of, so you've got to know what your boy's capable of too, because I might say, right, you've got to switch your head movement and switch left and switch. Well, that's not what I do, so I can't just fucking do it.
Yeah.
Where your plan for him would be different against Jeff's plan too. So, you know, at the end of the day, Glenn knows Jeff more than any of us do, let's be honest. Yeah, you know what I mean? So whether it was right or wrong, like what they came up with, who knows?
Yeah.
Mate, I'm gonna add on to that though. This is the testing one. Mate, after the knockdown, not the first one, because I think he was fine. I think we all agree that Jeff was fine after the first knockdown early on. Was it round two, was it? Early on in
round
the fight.
Two or three,
I thought that was a flash knockdown. He was up, he was fine. But after the knockdown late, if you were Glenn Rushton, would you have stopped that fight or would you let it keep going?
Just from watching it and then, you know, and plus, you know, a lot of people touched base on it because it was there in the moment and that, just sort of seeing like when he went down that first time and just sort of how his head hit the ground.
That was what I was a bit worried about too.
And then not just that, like his head hit the ground and like Jeff's credit, like he's like, he is tough and he's got so much heart. Like he got up, but even when he got up, like he rocked back to the ropes and like, and then even Glenn, he was jumped up on the stairs because I think he thought the referee was going to stop it there. And you know, he didn't throw the towel in there. But I think, you know, I think Glenn just thought like, right, like Jeff, like you got one more chance like, to either grab on, hold. And then I think, you know, Glenn was giving him that chance to pull something out of the bag, you know. Yeah. And it was just unfortunate, you know, he didn't. And Zarafa came out. Yeah, Zarafa had the right game plan. He went hard and, you know, stopped him with the second one. So. Yeah,
look. Every coach makes errors. Every coach does positive things. And like we've said before, everyone's got an opinion. When somebody makes a mistake, it's fucking, it's easy to bag everybody else. But look, at the end of the day, look, I'm pretty sure I would have stopped the fight. Yeah. I'm not in that scenario, but I'm pretty sure I would have done. But again, everybody's different. He knows Jeff better, a lot better than I know Jeff as far as his fighting goes anyway.
Yeah,
so,
100%.
You know, so, mate, I'm going to throw some extra questions at you, right?
Yeah.
What would you rather?
Yeah, here we go.
What would you rather? Fight one horse-sized duck or 100 duck-sized horses?
Jeez, cover that in English,
come
please.
On, come on, mate.
Well,
One horse-sized duck or 100 duck-sized horses?
I think the one horse-sized duck. So yeah. Just because, so I don't get, I think the numbers game.
You reckon they'd surround you?
Yeah, they just come at me.
Yeah, just come at you from all the, nice.
I just have to land that one good shot. That's
straight on the beak?
Right on the beak,
Like that, fucking excellent answer. What would you rather, eat the same meal for the rest of your life or never use Instagram again?
Never use Instagram again.
Yeah, you couldn't eat the same fucking piece of pasta every single day.
Well, imagine if it was just like tuna salad.
They should be able to store
tuna salad.
You'd have constantly stinky breath and everything.
Yeah, exactly.
You'd look good for Instagram. Okay. You have to take photos of it.
Oh, excellent.
Yeah, I'd scrap the Insta.
Would you struggle at first?
You know what's weird, but I've always said this as well, if it wasn't for like boxing or my work, like I probably wouldn't be on social media, right? Because it's crazy how much time you actually realize how much you actually look at your phone and waste time. And I went on a holiday when I think I was 19. I went on a cruise for 10 days, and on the cruise, like unless you pay ridiculous amounts of money for Wi-Fi, so literally I got on the cruise ship, turned my phone off, and put it in the bottom cupboard. And at the end of the 10 days, I was just like, I reckon the highlight of the holiday was just not being on my phone for 10 days.
Yeah, we actually saw what was in front of you.
The first thing I did was got on Instagram. We got back to shore. I was like, oh, yeah.
20 shots to get one good one. Mate, what would you rather? Would you rather wake up with a woman's face, but you're still a man, or look the same as you do, but be a woman? In other words, sit down and piss.
That's a hard one. Yeah.
Whatever you say, you're going to get bagged out of.
Yeah, probably wake up as a woman, but still have a man's face.
I won't even say what, because kids might be listening. I won't even say what I was going to say. Anyway, it might be fun. Okay, mate, would you rather be trapped in an elevator for 10 hours with an old lady and three wet, smelly dogs, or three fat men with bad breath?
Ooh.
10 hours, imagine that. That'd be terrible.
Yeah, probably the old lady with the dogs.
Yeah?
Yeah, I'd probably go the old lady with the dogs.
Fucking wet and stinking.
Yeah, like, I mean.
But then the blokes.
Fat blokes. And plus, after a few, they might try and do something to you.
You might try something on
there.
Seedy bastard. Mate, Reagan, we want to thank you for your time. This has been an excellent podcast. We'll release it hopefully this afternoon or tomorrow, mate. I think this is one of our best ones. It's been great to everybody get to know you. And
thanks heaps, guys. And everyone out there, like, I've listened to every single one of the JB and Jay podcasts. Like, make sure you get amongst it. Make sure you share it, because they're, bloody sensational.
Excellent. Thanks, Reagan. Jacko, anything before we go?
No, just a pleasure having you, mate. Hopefully kids get a good insight into how to come back from a loss. I think Reagan's given that
message. Yeah. 100%. And you know what? All successful people say the same thing. You've just got to get over it. But kids have got to start believing that. Like, a loss doesn't count yet. Boys, thanks very much. Reggie, Desix, Mr. Desix, thank you very much.